You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, it's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Joining us now, Vanessa Richardson. You can see her every single day on KPRC Channel 2. I see what you're doing there, Dell. Vanessa, first thing I want to ask you is how lonely was it in the Texans press box the other day?
Can you repeat that? Sorry, it was super quiet.
How lonely was it in the Texans press box the other day?
Okay, so it was, and just to be specific, since apparently media people are the most gossipy group in the world, because I keep hearing that people are mad about this, but no one will tell me who. So to clarify, there were some radio guys, and there were a couple of print people, but out of the TV stations, which there's two Spanish stations, CW, and then the four kind of main local news stations, I was the only sports TV person there. So yeah, like it was super lonely, and I took a picture, and the rest is history.
Vanessa, first of all, those people are only bitter because they've been had, because they got called out, because the truth had to be told, and they're not happy about it because they've been living the life of luxury for years around here and getting away with it thanks to the internet and access to video. But you have to be welcome to the world of Houston media, especially as it relates to Houston radio. These internal wars and station-on-station crime and internal station in our own station, we've been dealing with these things. This is beautiful. Now all you got to do is the next press conference when you get the side eye from Matt Musil, or you get the Berman was in Atlanta, so he's not going to give it to you. Daniel Gotera, he's going to run out of hairspray, and he's going to look at you and go, why did you call me out? I mean, these are the kind of things you'll know exactly who's a little bit hot under the collar at you. They deserved it.
Look, it's to be completely honest, it was somebody from one of the other radio stations that pointed out that I was the only one, and I was like, oh my God, that's so funny. But to tell you the truth, it kind of shows in some ways how bad the Texans are and how they're just, in some people's minds, not a big story. You guys saw how empty the seats were. It's really sad. Any way that you look at it, that this team finally gets a franchise quarterback in Deshaun Watson, and then everything goes to heck in a handbasket so quickly. So, yeah, I mean, it was an indictment of a lot of different things. But I certainly, and I think I can say this because I work in TV, and Julie, your lovely wife, works in TV as well. If anybody ever wants to know what TV people are like, certainly the fact that people got mad about it kind of sums it up.
Yeah, it's funny that people are mad at you about this. That's ridiculous. Vanessa Richardson works for Channel 2, Houston sports reporter and anchor for Channel 2, joining us on the HR&P guest line. But you bring up a good point about how the Texans, it's basically rock bottom for them right now. And we saw the picture of you in the press box, but how about the seats, the fans in attendance? How lowly is that? And then also just walking around before the game, what used to be a very proud fan base, tailgating was great. How is that looking these days?
Well, it's interesting because tailgating has always been really, really great at NRG Stadium. And then Jamie Lynch was so successful with what he did that they always sold out, as you guys know, even when, the Texans might not be great. So it's really, really stunning to have no traffic really before or after the game. And, look, this is a rebuild, right? This is a rebuild mode. And I think fans, from what I've heard, it's not necessarily, like, nobody wants to be a part of a rebuild, but it's more about how they're rebuilding. You know, people don't agree with nothing, with their culture. And so I guess only time will tell. But, yeah, hopefully for folks in Houston, I mean, look, Lance McCullers Jr. said it best. Houston is a baseball city as far as pro sports go. But this is still Texas. It's still football. It's still the NFL. So I do genuinely hope, you know, not because I was raised as a Texans fan, because I wasn't, but for Houston's sake, that the Texans get to a point to where the tailgating is rocking and to where there are full seats and there's at least like a light at the end of the tunnel with some young players who have a lot of potential.
Well, Vanessa, a lot of people believe that now that Bill O'Brien's gone, until Jack Easterby's gone, that's not the kind of happy-go-lucky culture that we're going to see, because enough is enough, and this was the first sign that they're actually going to make the Texans take note of it. But I'm curious from a media perspective, because you get in the press conferences with the national media. You know, you see the national media when you're covering the games. The national media, too, I feel like the local media actually goes light on this franchise from Caserio to Cully, and not kind of pouncing on some of the mistakes and some of the, like, innuendo they throw your way and tell you, hey, we're competing for championships. We're a winning team. And everybody's got to be scratching their temple going, maybe like three, four years ago, but you can't keep trying to force feed us this BS that we're a competitive team and we're doing all these things to move in the right direction when we see the exact opposite.
Yeah, I mean, I think what makes it difficult, I'm a very direct person, and so I would love to have Nick Caserio, Jack Easterby, Cal McNair available in press conferences. And look, I'm not saying they should or shouldn't, or that it's for the, you know, maybe from a PR perspective, it's better that they don't. But I would actually like that, and I think other media members were as well, because, look, David Cooley can only do so much. We know why he was brought here. We knew that he was brought here at a time when the Texans were not going to be good and when they were going through a lot. And not even like, and I don't mean to minimize the allegations against Deshaun Watson, but there was problems even before that, right? Because he wanted out. He didn't like the culture. You had Andre Johnson standing up for him. So I think from a media perspective, if I could have one wish, you know, it would be that we had more media availability with Jack or Nick or Cal or, you know, whoever behind the scenes that are making these decisions, just so we can get a better pulse of it, because, you know, David Cooley is only, as the head coach, going to tell us so much.
Channel 2 reporter Vanessa Richardson joining us on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I believe the last time that Cal McNair had a media availability, you pressed him pretty hard on why Jack Easterby was still in this organization. He sidetracked your question, didn't answer it, but what's your best guess why?
I would think he has a good relationship with Nick Caserio, and obviously has a really strong relationship with not only Cal McNair, but, you know, we know who helped sign Cal, and that's his wife and his mom, and so I just think the simplest answer is that the owner of the franchise trusts him and likes him. And, you know, whether you agree with it or not, I think a lot of people don't. But regardless, you have to have the owner in your corner to continue to operate. And at some point, you know, Bill O'Brien definitely had Cal in his corner because he was promoted to general manager and was also calling plays. So he was doing three jobs at once. And then for whatever reason, he lost that trust. So I think the simplest answer of why Jack is still around, or anybody is around, is that Cal and Hannah and perhaps Janice really trust these people to take the Texans to the next level.
Vanessa, switching gears without talking about the anthems that might be played tonight. Let's get over to some, like you said, Lance said it's a baseball town. But how enjoyable in contrast is it to cover one Dusty Baker, who, aside from anything else, is going to give you honesty. He calls it like he sees it, and he sees it in a special way. And it's got to be fun covering that guy on a daily basis.
It's unbelievable, and it's so refreshing. Look, he's an OG. Everybody knows that he's a vet, and he does say exactly what's on his mind. I remember, I think a week or so ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, he said something along the lines of, you know, every now and then I don't know and agree with what James Click and Jim Crane do, and then sometimes it works out. And just that ability to be self-aware, especially at his age, because he's one, as you guys know, that has really evolved with the game. Yes, he's still old school in some ways, but he doesn't let that hold him back. And it's just so freaking cool, right? Like, he and I were talking about music. I'm a big Bill Withers fan. My dad loves Bill Withers. And Dusty Baker goes, oh, yeah, I was friends with Bill and his wife, Denise. I'm like, what? What? You know, he's just home and just live this amazing life. And so, yeah, it's a pleasure to cover him. And, you know, I don't know what his plans are, but I certainly think that he's earned another year here in Houston. And I would be surprised if Jim Crane didn't see it the same way.
That's where I was going to go next. Is it surprising, like it is to the national media, he doesn't already have an extension? I know Jeremy basically would love nothing more than anybody else in that chair next year. I like him as a person. I've questioned some of his moves. But I think that based on how far he's taken this team yet again, he deserves the opportunity to come back. But what's your gut feeling in terms of, will he be back next year?
Yeah, my gut feeling is that he will, if he wants to. I mean, I don't think he wants to retire. He hasn't indicated that. But my gut feeling would be that he will. And look, not only did he take over this franchise, he took it over after one of the biggest cheating scandals in sports history and had to navigate that and had to answer to that. And so I think he's done a really good job. My gut feeling would say that he will be back if he wants to. But what we've seen from this Astros team, whether you're talking about the Carlos Correa deal or whatever, is that they really don't want to address things during the season and that they just prefer to wait until the season is over. So I would imagine we'll have answers sooner rather than later, but I think he certainly earned it.
Channel 2's Vanessa Richardson joining us on the HRMP guest line. And Joel kind of hinted at it, your tweet before the start of the World Series. You said if the World Series ends up being Houston versus Atlanta, International Players Anthem needs to be played before every game. A lot of media outlets picked this up. It went viral. I'm always fascinated with what goes viral because you never know as you're tweeting it out. Like, okay, this is my intent.
Right.
My intent is for it to go viral. You're sending out what you think is kind of a clever tweet. What was the first impression? You're like, uh-oh, this is going to take a life of its own.
So I woke up, and obviously if people listening don't know, all it is a rap song between Outkast, who's from Atlanta, and UGK, who's from Houston. Thought of as classic rap song, a classic rap song in the entire country, but especially those cities. So that's why I tweeted it, and I was tweeting it meaning Fox should, you know, bump in and out of breaks with it one time, or they should play it at Truist and Minute Maid, because you know Bucky, who is in the NBK, is going to be there. That's all I meant. And then it just took on a life of its own. So I woke up and just had an insane amount of notifications on Twitter, and I'm like, what? And there were a certain couple hundred people that thought that it was an actual foreign anthem. Instead of just Googling, they assumed that.
So let's face it, it was racist.
Un-American, socialist, a myriad of different things. But then other people who know the rap song caught on, and that's when, you know, Michael Eaves from SportsCenter retweeted it, and all these people quoted it and said, oh my God, read the replies. Like, people think it's a real anthem. So I had a lot of people come at me, but I had even more people stand up for me, and I made a very conscious decision that I was not going to respond to anybody,
so,
and I didn't. I'm like, it's not my job to correct these people.
But how long did it take for my good friend Randy McAvoy to call, and then how long did it take you to explain to him what it really was? Because I have no doubt he had no clue what that was.
Yeah, I mean, look, I had a lot of people that I worked with that came up to me and basically said, listen, I had never heard the song, but I can't believe people are attacking you like that. Why can't they just Google it? But I leaned into it, and we have a really great creative services director. Her name is Natalia, and she called me, and she was like, hey, are you okay, blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, whatever. I'm having fun with it. And she was like, well, write up a web article explaining it to people. And so we just took the attitude of let's have some fun with it because it is going viral, and you know, so it ended up being funny. But yeah, for about 3 days, my phone, you know, my notifications were unbearable. And I actually saw Bum B the next day at Minute Maid because he was voicing over a hype video for the Astros. And I just looked at him and I said, have you seen? And he goes, I cannot believe it. Bum B found it funny too, which was nice.
But you're skirting the question. I mean, how long did it take you to explain it to McAvoy? Because I know he didn't have any clue.
Really explain it to him. I think he might have been heading for the road at that point. But yeah, I definitely had to explain it to some of my other coworkers that it wasn't an actual anthem and why people are so mad. And I put a best of, like a little slideshow reel together on Instagram. If you want to check it out at Sports Finesse, some of the comments were mean, but like I said. at the end of the day. Just funny and kind of sad that people don't know how to use Google to figure out a rap song.
Yeah. Vanessa, great stuff. Thanks for hopping on. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on. Huge fan.
Channel 2's Vanessa Richardson joining us on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. If any city deserves a 3-1 comeback in the World Series, it's Houston. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Cars for Kids. I've been telling you about them for quite a while. Look, it's a great program, and it helps kids get an education in Houston. The money stays local, but the most important thing for a lot of you is it does you a big favor. It gets a car, a truck, a trailer, a boat, a motorcycle off your property. It might not be working. You might not have the title for it. It may be a big eyesore, but you don't want to put any more money out to get rid of it. You don't want to pay for a towing service. You don't know what it's all going to intake if you can't find the title. You don't have to worry about any of that. All you do is go to carsforkids.org or call 713-225-4226. Tell them what you got. Tell them where you live. They're going to come to you and tow it away. They're going to take care of all the details, including tracking down that title if you don't have it. And so it costs you nothing. It does you a favor. It gets it off your property. It's a tax write-off, so you save yet again. Mention ESPN 97.5. You get a $50 Visa gift card. So now you're actually profiting for doing something like this, and that's where the process really begins. Once they get your donation, they turn it into resources for kids trying to get a second chance to get their degree. It could be book money, bus fare, food in their bellies, so they can concentrate on the books and their studies. And it all stays local at the Houston Can Academies, and everything is possible because of your donations. If you think there's something you might be able to contribute, please consider it now. It's carsforkids.org or 713-225-4226. At the end of the day, right off the car, not the kid.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
NFL trade deadline, game 6 of the World Series. Very busy day in the city. Texans should be sellers today. Although only trade so far for the Texans, Charles Omenihue headed to San Francisco for a late round pick being reported. That's 2023. They're still waiting to see if there's going to be other conditions involved. Melvin Ingram being traded by the Steelers to Kansas City for a 6th-round pick. I think it's a solid trade for Kansas City. Steelers don't get much. Ingram's not a great player anymore, but Kansas City can use any warm bodies on the defensive end.
Kansas City's a lot like Green Bay in a lot of ways with injuries and otherwise. They're just they're grasping at straws right now on the cheap. You know, Jalen Smith, the Cowboys linebacker the Packers picked up about 2 weeks ago, they're releasing him today, so that didn't work out, and maybe he really can't play anymore. They might find out, at least from an Ingram perspective, that he can't play. But, you know, it's an Easter beam. I mean, it's a Caserio move, right? It's you know, minimal giving up, but, you know, they're not doing it multiple times in a season like Nick is. But they're taking a chance that maybe a change of environment, you know, because there's a lot of talent on that Steelers defense, and he was getting buried on the depth chart, that maybe a change of scenery and an opportunity to play a little bit more consistently, he might find a little something left in the tank.
You know, if I'm the Steelers, though, and maybe they don't think they're a playoff contender, I would imagine that they do. Why do you help out another playoff contender, though? Like, I'd rather play defense and not trade them for a 6-round pick. Like, a 6-round pick's so small that why not just hang on to them?
Just keep
a defensive body out of Kansas City.
I think there's a lot to it. I think that they might be trying to free up some money. Some people think they're still going to be buyers, even though a lot of people think they should be sellers because the future is not bright. And, you know, we've seen a very fragile Ben Roethlisberger that's not the same quarterback. A lot of other people think this is the start of the fire sale in Pittsburgh where they're just going to unload a lot of guys that they have to try and save money and prepare for the future. And the next generation of Steelers, not with Ben Roethlisberger starting next year, they know they've got good young pieces on their defense. They wrapped up Watt. They've, you know, between Watt and Hayward and on the backside, Minkah Fitzpatrick, their defense has a lot of talent already. So maybe it's just about getting rid of the older players and getting ready to press the restart. But maybe they don't have to go all the way to, you know, rock bottom. They just have to keep their young players and then start stockpiling more talent as they move forward.
Adam Schefter saying, although the Dolphins did due diligence on Deshaun Watson and had conversations with Houston, Miami will not make a trade for the quarterback per source. A Dolphins ownership making the final decision. They had contingencies that needed to be met before any deal, and they were not met. Schefter going on to say, while Miami considered bringing in Deshaun, no deal was ever in place, and the Dolphins will stick with Tua, a young quarterback who has shown improvement this year. So the chances of Deshaun Watson being traded before the trade deadline at 3 doesn't appear it's going to happen. Yeah, that's another shot at John and Mark and Aaron.
Anyone else who jumped on the train?
Yeah,
I jumped on it whenever it happened.
I've been pretty
consistent
the whole time in saying he's just not going anywhere, and he's not going anywhere until these 22 cases are settled or solved or, you know, decided upon, and that no general manager in their right mind should be giving up a ton of assets for a guy that could absolutely backfire on them. And it's just been a ton of national thirsty media members looking for clicks and attention and wanting that run. And then local, you know, of late, local people got involved, too, to try and get their fill of the attention of, hey, you know, credit to John McClain and Mark Berman for breaking the story. That didn't come true. So we'll see what happens between now and 3. I may be completely wrong, but I felt all along like there's just too many hanging issues for this to actually get done.
Excuse me.
Yes?
What's the business model for Mike Florio going forward? Because, I mean, if you can't write a Deshaun in Miami story every 2 days, what do you do for clicks now?
He'll find something.
Well, the first thing he's going to do is get in touch with Mike Greenberg. Because Mike Greenberg, who ran 373 straight mornings of Aaron Rodgers is going to be somewhere else stories and then had to eat crow, they can actually serve it for Thanksgiving and they can move on. Because Mike has, and I believe that Florio will too. He's got such a platform. He'll find something else to talk about. Maybe now it'll be how deep do these allegations go with Deshaun Watson?
See,
is he tradable?
This is a bigger issue than just the Deshaun Watson thing, though. Like, this is the way sports media is. Sports media isn't about being right. It's about being loud, about being entertaining, about being first. Like, this isn't a surprise to anybody that all these people just keep rehashing and doing all of these things about being first, about being loud, about being entertaining. Ian Rappaport saying Deshaun Watson not settling his legal situation has resulted in him not getting traded. Source said Houston will stay put until the offseason. So Deshaun, the fact that he couldn't get the legal situation settled looks like it is the reason why Deshaun Watson's still going to be a Houston
citizen. I like the point you brought up, though, because it's something that I've been adamant about. And you know that it's one thing if, like, say, for instance, Skip Bayless, that's all he does. He just wants to get under your skin, and he wants that smoke because he knows with that smoke.
He wants to be the 15-second clip that goes viral.
He wants everybody talking about him because no matter if it's good, bad, or if he's way off his rocker, they're talking about him. They're retweeting him. They're coming at him with anger, and he lives for that. But there are certain guys you don't expect it from, and I think what really changed me was Schefter. When Schefter, Woj to a degree, but Woj is still going to be, I told you, he's one of the most powerful guys in basketball. But from a Schefter perspective, where I think that you can poll everybody, and the majority of us would say the go-to source, more than Rappaport, more than anybody else, it was Schefter for breaking news. But on draft night, when he just took it upon himself to insinuate Aaron Rodgers was going to be traded just to generate all that interest in the draft coverage that night on ESPN and his Twitter and all the other things, and then to find out later there was no substance to it, he was just trying to put two and two together and really believe that something could happen. But he didn't have any sources. He didn't have any credible people telling him that there were conversations happening. He just decided it was his opportunity to put it out there. That bothers me.
Yeah. I mean, it's journalism's kind of went by the wayside. I mean, let's be honest. If any city deserves a 3-1 comeback, it's Houston. Carlos Correa reiterating to fans, if there's a team that can do this, it's the Houston Astros. And you start looking back on what the city has experienced sports-wise. Like, if you want to go back to the Oilers being up 35-3 against Buffalo, if you want to throw the Texans in that same conversation, how they were up so many points against the Chiefs at Arrowhead. You can go as far back to the Renfro call. If you want to do the college basketball thing, Lorenzo Charles of NC State against Phi Slamma Jamma, the recent heartbreakers there. Astros in 98, Brad Lidge giving up the bomb to Pujols, even though the Astros won that series. Yeah. The shot against the Rockets with John Stockton, Chris Paul's hammy, Harden disappearing in the Western Conference semifinals against the San Antonio Spurs.
You're just firing up Houston today, aren't you?
It's funny, too, because it's Atlanta, too. Like, Atlanta's had heartbreak, like Houston has had heartbreak, too. But if anybody deserves, any city deserves a 3-1 comeback in the World Series, it's this city. It's the Houston city, especially with as bad as the football team is.
Well, and I think more so than anything else, it's the baseball team, right? It's overcoming 17. It's overcoming the hatred of the last several years, from fans to media to players to whoever wants to come out and just blame them as the poster children. And it's the ultimate perfect scenario to write the final chapter of this run, right? It's they didn't do it easily. They've been written off. Everybody's rooting against them. They're down 3-1. And then to actually write the Cinderella ending of down 3-1 to come back and win it in the fashion that they did, to prove once and for all, and they not only didn't cheat it, they're damn good baseball players. Dusty Baker gets his first World Series championship by resurrecting this team and leading it as the captain of a sinking ship, and all the other ways you can look at it, it would be the ultimate. And so you hope it happens, and you hope that, if nothing else, you hope there's a Game 7, and it's everything that we all expect a Game 7 to be, and it's much like the Nationals-Astros Game 7, only with a different final result, because with a different manager, you'd hope that he would go to the bullpen a hell of a lot quicker than AJ would. But for whatever the reasons, it would be the ultimate ending to this story.
Now, would you trade all those heartbreaks for a 3-1 comeback in the World Series? Because I believe I do. I believe I would trade all those heartbreaks to Houston sports fans.
But you keep 17?
For the World Series. I mean, you keep 17, you win 21 as well, yeah. I mean, 17 is not a heartbreak for the city of Houston.
No, but I'm saying, are you giving up everything in the past that you're talking about?
No, you keep the World Series title. I'm talking about the heartbreaks only.
I think everybody's accepted the other heartbreaks, and it's part of sport.
Yeah, bring them on.
And so I think that everybody can say, you know what, if we can get rid of all, we'll stop talking about Frank Reich and all those in between, and Renfro in the corner of the end zone, and whatever else you want to talk about. If we can talk about this, the resurrection and the redemption of the 2021 Astros, I think a lot of people would be on board with that in a heartbeat.
What is your biggest heartbreak as a sports fan? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we come back, we'll do that. Also, let's go around the NFL. It's trade deadline today. It's been a little bit of a quiet trade deadline in the NFL, but some pretty big news around the league. Before we go to break, let's go out, though, to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Art, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, guys. I'm actually hopeful that they're going to be still talking about the Astros cheating after all this is done, because hopefully the Astros can take care of business tonight, and then they'll take care of business Game 7. And then people are going to be saying, hey, look, they can only win when they're at home. So I hope that they have that argument, because that means that the Astros won. And then for your next little segment there, Tony Romo fumbling the ball on the field goal during the playoff game for the Cowboys is my worst memory on sports. So
biggest sports heartbreak from Art was the Romo dropping on the kick. That was a tough one if you're a Cowboy fan, no doubt about it. Look, people are going to always talk about the scandal of the Astros, no matter what. Their mindset and their theories on this have already been conditioned to think that way.
But that's why it's not going to continue, because if they win it this year, you can't say it was because of cheating.
But it's always going to be lumped together. They're going to be synonymous with the scandal forever, even if they win. I mean, people are going to make up assumptions that they were cheating this year.
I agree with the fact that they're going to be synonymous, Astros and cheating. But I think that as it relates to this year's team, when you know that basically unequivocally, they've proven it time up and down and around with all the different ways they're looking for it, that there was no cheating this year, that you can just tip your cap and go, that's the World Series champions and they earned it.
People aren't sane. You know, people aren't going to do that. Maybe like the respected people, maybe the pundits and the national writers, but fans, no chance. 713-780-3776. Biggest sports heartbreak. We'll go around the NFL when we return. Skiller Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Now Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, a little more information on Deshaun Watson staying with the Houston Texans past today's trade deadline. Deadline's still 90 minutes away. Been quiet to this point. Texans have made one deal. Charles Omenihu's headed to San Francisco for a late-round pick in 2023. We'll see what it is eventually, but no terms on it just yet. Josina Anderson, who covers the NFL, in regards to the Dolphins not trading for Deshaun Watson, they are out. I was told that Dolphins owner Stephen Ross wanted a chance to talk to Deshaun Watson, but it was not granted in time. No deal. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network's reporting something very similar, saying that Dolphins owner Stephen Ross was granted permission to talk to Deshaun Watson last night. So interesting in the fact that, like, I wonder when Stephen Ross was asking for permission. And if he was asking for this a week ago, if he was asking for this 2 weeks ago, it's a little bit of a failure here that the Houston Texans didn't grant that permission far sooner than as recently as last night.
Yeah, I mean, and Dell, we were talking about with Dell during the break, and that's the thing. I mean, what the hell were you doing, and what were you afraid of? Everyone should have been granted permission to talk to the guy that wanted to talk to him because, you know, he's not going to embarrass your franchise any more than you've already embarrassed yourself. The main thing is they need to get to the bottom of how serious are you about solving these 22 cases and or paying them off or doing what you need to do, and how serious are all the allegations, and how, what are the chances of any of them going all the way through and seeing it through to fruition to where there would be penalties associated, and how badly do you want to get out so that we can figure out if we can get something done. The fact that that wasn't happening, it hasn't happened, or at least this indicates that, just shows you even more incompetence for this new regime of Houston Texans football, and that's disappointing.
The bright side of this is that, look, we have a resolution as far as November 2nd goes. The downside of it is that it's to be continued. I guess that's also a little bit of optimism, too, because you and I are in the same boat, that we feel the Texans can get more by trading Deshaun Watson in the offseason, whenever maybe the civil cases have been resolved by then. Maybe more teams will be interested in Deshaun Watson by then. The fact that Deshaun Watson will not get traded today is a victory for the Houston Texans, in my opinion, because now they can maximize the return on Deshaun Watson in the offseason, barring what happens legally with all the situations there. Also, for the next 85 minutes, they need to try like heck to move everybody in the organization. Brandon Cooks, the key figure there for me, he needs to be traded. Like, the fact that, oh, he's a culture guy, he's good for our locker room. How good is that for a team that's not very good? How good is that for a team that's in a rebuild? If Brandon Cooks is on this roster at 3:01 today, Nick Caserio lost the trade deadline for me.
Yeah, and it's just another loss for the Texans and Nick Caserio, right? As much as I've been saying give him the benefit of the doubt, and you've been critical of some of the moves he's made, I've been sticking up for him by saying at least they're only 6th and 7th round picks, and thank God maybe for his first draft he didn't have a 1st, a 2nd round pick to trade away or screw up, because they're going to be so vital going forward that maybe he's learned some lessons along the way. Now maybe again he hasn't, because these are critical, critical thing, you know, details and parts of an overall solution to a massive problem for this franchise. We talk about, you know, the fact that unless Easterby goes, a lot of people are done with this franchise. Unless Deshaun Watson goes, a lot of people are done with this franchise. Until they find him a new home and they get resolution to this never-ending story that people are sick and tired of talking about and hearing about and discussing, and the fact that the national media stir it up and now the locals were stirring it back up. It's like nails on a chalkboard to a Texans fan going, between Easterby and this Watson situation and our bumbling idiot of an owner, we've got so many different things that make us look just absolutely horrible that we just would like to wash our hands of all of it and go, can we just start over? And they can't, because no matter what they do in the draft, no matter what they do it today at the deadline, trading away, until they can escape at least two of those three factors, because Cal ain't going anywhere, this thing is not going to be resolved from a fan perspective.
I mean, I would literally trade everybody I got an offer for. I'm not even kidding. People are like, well, how are you going to replace the 53
guys? You and I are on
the same
page, like you said.
How are you going to replace the 20 guys? Who cares? You're losing anyways. Like, who cares if you have 20 new dudes by Sunday? You're losing anyway.
You set the tone that you don't want to win anyway. You want to compete, but you don't want to win, and you shouldn't be judged by wins and losses. So, therefore, you already set that tone. You got the one win at the start of the year so that you don't have to worry about being a winless team the first time ever in a 17-game season. Now, They want to lose the rest of the year. I hate to break that to Texans fans. It's the whole reason why you're supposed to embrace the suck, because they want you to accept the fact this year is a wash. A
couple of heartbreaking moments. King of Twitch saying the Astros losing to the Mets in the 86 NLCS. Heartbreaking. Got a few NFL fans, a Bronco fan, Flacco Hail Mary in the playoffs. The Saints Rams NFC Championship game, no PI. Game Day OJ tweeting us as well. As a Falcons fan, 28-3 was my biggest heartbreak. And look, that's the other side of this World Series story, right?
Rach is a friend. She's a former intern here.
Right.
And she's a massive Atlanta fan. So we don't want to give her too much run because she's a Braves fan too. But
that's the other side of the story is that Atlanta has been in these moments where they've had a heartbreak as well. What's your biggest heartbreak?
You really want to know?
That's why I asked.
The most painful moment in my lifetime was the NFC Championship game where the Packers in Seattle had the game won for all but 30 seconds. And an onside kick and an overzealous tight end that wanted to be a hero fumbled it, lost it. They blew a 17-point lead. They lost in overtime. And it's something I will absolutely never get over or forget.
Wow, that's pretty good. Dell, you have a biggest sports heartbreak?
I mean, the initial one that comes to mind is the 2003 Fiesta Bowl, 2002 season. But really, the first time I can remember crying over any sporting event was the 1990 Sugar Bowl. 93 Sugar Bowl, 92 season. Miami had a chance to go back-to-back, and they get blown out by Alabama. Dennis Erickson's team allegedly partied quite a bit that week in New Orleans, didn't really take Alabama seriously, and it showed on the field. That's the first time I remember crying over any sporting event.
I remember when I was young, and after the Rockets won the back-to-back titles, and then they lost in the semis to the Sonics when they were swept. I remember taking that one pretty hard. Recent memory? Jordan Poole and Tyler Herro. Sports hate for Jordan Poole and Tyler Herro. Just ripping your heart out in one instance. So I have to put those on the list. Aaron Boone, 2003 ALCS Game 7 as a Red Sox fan. That's a pretty good one, too. Oklahoma, Boise State in 2007. I'll never forget not being able to look away from the TV after the Statue of Liberty play. I have a buddy who played on that Boise State team. He was the punter on that Statue of Liberty team back in 2007. Some news in the NFL. No trades as of yet, other than the ones we mentioned earlier. It's been pretty quiet. The only trade the Texans have made to this point, Charles Minnehue, is headed to San Francisco for a late-round pick. We saw the blockbuster yesterday, Von Miller heading to L.A. for a second and a third. He was very classy in his exit. That was cool to see. To me, this was a win-win. We discussed this yesterday. The Rams get a very good defensive player to put him on the same defensive line as Aaron Donald. You also have Jalen Ramsey in the back end as well. And I like what Denver did. Denver's willing to eat most of that contract to increase the draft capital they get back. And Von Miller was in the last year of his deal. A win for the Rams getting better right now, a win for the Broncos, who, by the way, they're 4-4 and they're fire selling. Why aren't you, Nick Caserio? That they get a second and a third for a guy in the last year of his deal. I thought that was a really good trade. Sean Payton saying they don't need a quarterback. They lose Jameis Winston. He was meeting with the media. He says he likes what he sees from Trevor Siemian and Taysom Hill as well. It doesn't look like they're going to be in the market to add a quarterback to that team.
I really thought that Tyrod Taylor might find a home in New Orleans, and that might be an option. And I don't know what the concussion situation is with Taysom Hill, but I also believe, just like I said, that Jameis should have been the starting quarterback right from the get-go. It's because of the fact that, as a Swiss Army knife, Taysom Hill has more value in all the different positions he could play. The interesting one that someone just brought up on text is something that should be considered, and that is with whatever's going on with Henry Ruggs III and this issue going on with the Raiders. The Raiders may need a wide receiver too. Maybe Brandon Cooks has a market more than we think. Maybe some team is willing to somewhat overpay because they're in the situation with the Raiders. They're a contending team. I mean, they have to be considered as a playoff team if nothing else, and they're trying to make a push to win now. I would hope that there's going to be a market for Brandon Cooks, that no matter what they believe he can do sticking around, being a part of the culture and the rebuild, that they'll find more value in a guy that might even find a second-round pick out of it if you're lucky and there's competition between teams that are desperate.
77 minutes for the Houston Texans to get some more done as they try to add some draft capital to what they currently have in their arsenal. But yes, the big news of the day in the NFL isn't a trade. Henry Ruggs involved in a bad car wreck earlier this morning in Las Vegas. Somebody in the wreck has passed away. Henry Ruggs is facing charges of DUI, resulting in death as he was impaired, according to some of the investigative journalists out in the Las Vegas area. So the Raiders are in a situation now where, look, I mean, even the football side feels kind of trivial to talk about when somebody earlier today lost their lives because of a stupid decision that Henry Ruggs made, if true. But, yeah, I mean, if they're a team that wants to contend in the AFC playoffs, you would think that here they go. They better act fast because this wasn't in their plans to start the day. Sad news there in Vegas. Stupid decision by Henry Ruggs, if true.
If true, right? Because I think the other thing is whether, you know, you say, well, they have all this money as professional athletes. It doesn't matter. If you know you're going to go out a night on the town, which everyone's entitled to do, and you feel like you're getting liquored up or, you know, in any way you're impaired – whether you get a ride share of some sort, a Lyft or you know, whatever you want to go to, an Uber, or you want to get a limo or you want to do something. But if you're going to do it, just do it the right way to be sensible so that you don't put lives that have nothing to do with your fun times in jeopardy. That's just the main thing across the board, whether, you know, it's this situation or other situations. It's too easy to avoid drinking and driving these days.
Ocho saying about heartbreaks, bad heartbreaks. The U of H lost to NC State made him immune to all other heartbreaks that even women can break his heart these days. Des Bryant on here, Dre saying Don Beebe was out of bounds. A few texts as well. One word, Buckner. The perfect season. Dez dropped it. No catch, which wasn't a catch, by the way. The Titans, Rams.
It wasn't?
No. Not by the way that the rule was written. Absolutely not.
But I'm just
not.
Saying, I was there in person. It was a catch. And, you know, but here's
letter
the thing.
Letter of the law? No way.
But here's the thing. I've been since day one and having sat there watching it in stadium live and then in replay right in front of me. It was a catch, and they would have scored. But you can't tell me as angry Cowboy fans, still like Dr. Dre, still lives and dies with this desperate argument that the Cowboys have seen this happen to him with less than a minute in their building against them twice with number 12 as quarterback. You're telling me with three timeouts down a field goal with 2 minutes and change, maybe 3 minutes left on the clock, you're telling me that you don't think Aaron Rodgers would have scored? You're out of your freaking mind.
Shots fired. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. The Henry Ruggs situation in Nevada state law, 2 to 20 years for DUI resulting in death, which may be kind of light if you look at the front end of that for what went on. If true, I mean, again, this news on this is changing by the second. So we'll see if exactly what the truth is. But multiple people were reporting this. It's a front story on ESPN as well. Henry Ruggs facing charges of DUI resulting in death in Nevada, right there near the strip as well. One of the better receivers for the Las Vegas Raiders. 713-780-ESPN. When we come back, Luis Garcia starting game 6 tonight on short rest. 3 days rest for the first time in his career. Why Dusty Baker's doing it. When we return, it's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Cowboy fan not happy with me after I said that it was a no catch from Dez. By the way, the rule was written back then. It wasn't. 713-780-ESPN. Biggest sports heartbreaks. Robert and Tomball with a good one. Born and raised in Kentucky, Christian Laettner.
That's a painful one.
He was perfect in that game. One of the best college basketball tournament games in history. And Laettner was perfect
one of
in
the
that
most
game.
Hated athletes of all time. But you cannot take away he's, if not the greatest, one of the greatest, along with then Lew Alcindor and maybe one or two others, as the greatest college player of all time.
Elvin Hayes in that conversation. Pistol Pete's probably in that conversation. It's tough to go with different generations because the way sure the game is played. But yeah, Christian Laettner was a stud. I mean, he was very good. 713-780-3776. Game 6 World Series tonight at an open-roofed Minute Maid Park, for those that care. Houston Astros going with Luis Garcia on short rest. Max Fried on a maximum day of rest. He gets an extra day. He's on 5 days rest. He'll be pitching for the Atlanta Braves in Game 6. A lot of discussion on going with Luis Garcia in Game 6. You know my stance on this, and your stance is very similar. I do not like I don't like any pitcher ever going on short rest. I don't like it when it's Luis Garcia, and he's never done it in his career. I don't like it whenever Luis Garcia got 6 days of rest to pitch in Game 3, and now he's getting 3 days of rest to pitch in Game 6. You have to win both of these games to win the World Series. I understand the logic of, well, you can't be a Game 7 if you don't win Game 6. You have to do everything you can to win Game 6. While that is true, you also have to win 2 games to win the World Series. What gives you a better chance to win the World Series? To patch it up with a bullpen day in Game 6, win it, and then go to a fully rested Luis Garcia, or to go Luis Garcia on short rest and patch it together with a bullpen day in a Game 7? Either way, you're going to have to patch it together with a bullpen day in either Game 6 or Game 7. So if it's up to me, knowing I need to win both, Luis Garcia on full rest gives you a better chance to winning both than pitching him on short rest for me.
And we're in perfect agreement in it. That's why I'm not going to just continue to belabor the point, because I agree with everything you said. I was shocked Urquidy got in the game the other night. I could see them trying to say that, but justify it by saying it was like his bullpen session. It wasn't, because it was a more high leverage situation. It was where he had to make more real pitches than just throwing and working on control and in things between starts. And that is bothersome, but more so that this is a kid that you've been babying along the way and made very clear to the media and anyone that would listen that, hey, we're monitoring his innings. We're worried because this is the most he's ever thrown as a professional, and we don't want to ruin him because he's our future and part of our future. Well, you're going with the exact opposite of giving him the extra day to start the series by taking a day, take 2 days away and forcing him to pitch. Whether you like it or not, you had experienced starting pitchers and other pitchers that would have been available to fill the void and save him for the biggest game of your season if you get there in Game 7. Now, if there's a situation later in the game where you had to use him, I totally get it. Dusty is win or bust. This is what we got to go for. We got to throw it all, including the kitchen sink, and then deal with the ramifications if there's a Game 7. But I think that you had other options, whether it be to not use Urquidy the other night, whether it be or Odorizzi to start with and let him, a guy that struggled to get warm and ready during game situations when he's in the bullpen, go back to what he knows best, how much time he needs to get ready to be a starting pitcher, give him a shot. He said he's been trying to get himself re-stretched out as these series have progressed from Chicago to Boston to the World Series. And you don't know what you could get from him, but you could very well get a Greinke-like heroic performance because he's a veteran pitcher that knows how to pitch, especially as a starter. You had other options. I just don't think when you're trying to look for the best option in a team that is desperate, they have to win, than to take this kid and take him up to the mound on 3 days
right. Hey, this is a consistent stance I just have, period. Like the Walker Buehler and the Dodgers did it in the NLCS. They went to Buehler on short rest in a Game 6 in a must win, and he pitched poorly. So this is just a stance I have that I'm consistent with. And look, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm very wrong when it comes to Luis Garcia tonight. Dusty Baker asked about it. He said, we think he's best for the job. We realize that he has a short leash. So again, Dusty already saying he has a short leash. He probably would in a Game 7 as well. But knowing that he's on short rest, Dusty saying realizing he's on a short leash, but then everybody out there has a short leash and is operating on low rest or not full rest.
Here's the other thing. If he had done one of these Fromber-esque starts where he was out in an inning or two and his pitch count was in the 40s, then I would also maybe lean a little bit more to at least justifying starting tonight because he didn't throw that much. He threw 72 pitches in Game 3 before he got taken out. That's almost like a full start no matter how many innings he got through. So it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I would have tried to hold back Urquidy. I realize you have to win a Game 5. I would have tried to hold him back, not use him in that game so he could start today. If you felt the need that you absolutely had to have him in Game 5, I would still try to start him today. Maybe he only goes about 2 innings or so, and then you follow him up with an Odorizzi. That's not ideal, but you start thinking about a Game 7, there's not really an ideal option for Game 7 either. Maybe Greinke on a short rest can give you a couple. Maybe Odorizzi, if you don't use him today, can give you a couple. Of course, the whole staff would be available tomorrow, as all hands will be on deck. Luis Garcia was asked about starting on short rest, and he feels like he's up for the task.
Nothing changed. I just had to do like things more quick. I can say that. But nothing has changed. I just want to do my thing and be prepared for tomorrow. I've been feeling since the postseason start. Like when it started, I was kind of nervous, but now I have confidence on myself and what I can do, and I feel better. That's what I need to do. And it happens. But just gonna try to make out and I don't know, like do my best.
So that was Luis Garcia on the opportunity to start 3 days rest. Game six, Astros need it today, do or die. Their baseball lives are on the line. How do you feel about the decision? Luis Garcia on short rest tonight, 713-780-3776. And what do you hope he gets done? How many innings, how many runs would you like to see from Luis Garcia? I'm not talking about the bright side. Like, what's the worst you would accept? Like, five runs? I mean, five innings, three runs.
I was going to say five runs, and he better already been out.
I mean, I got it backwards. Five innings, three runs. Would you take four innings, three runs? Something along those lines. What's the worst you would take from Luis Garcia today where you still feel like the Astros would win? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776.
As I look at it, you're at home now. Right, and I would expect that this we see the offense that we've been accustomed to seeing all season long, especially against a pitcher that I think they're going to feel comfortable against. So you would think that they're going to score at four or more in this game. So therefore, if he gave you four or five innings and only gave up three runs, you'd be okay. But I think that's the threshold. I think whenever he approaches the ability to give up three runs, whether they've already scored or they're on base, I think Dusty cannot be too patient tonight. He is, as much as have analyzed him and his ability to go to, you know, handle pitching staffs and maybe go to the pen too quickly, this is one where you can't go to the pen quick enough tonight, if in my mind.
Short leash. We had a texter earlier saying have somebody in the bullpen ready to go, already throwing. I wouldn't go that far, but cleats on for sure, stretching, being stretched before they start throwing in case Garcia runs into some trouble tonight. And then who's that bridge guy too? I mean, is it Javier you go to? Is it Odorizzi that you go to?
Like, Odorizzi, I believe, is going to pitch tonight.
See, I mean, Yimmy's going to be the guy that cleans up the inning. Like, if Luis Garcia
is in first
into the second inning and he gives up a leadoff walk, maybe the next guy gets a hit and you have runners first and second, one out, and you feel like Garcia needs to be pulled, Yimmy is your cleaner. Yimmy's going to come in to clean that inning, and then you go with the long guy. You think that it's going to be Odorizzi in that role tonight?
No, I think he's going to pitch tonight. I think the first two guys out of the pen, and they will both be warming up, and depending on who's coming up, you will see Maton and you will see Yimmy because they had one day off. It doesn't matter. They've both been Dusty's go-to workhorses out of the pen, and I would think, and either guy has been the first guy to go out of the bullpen and pitch. I think those two guys are going to be warmed up and ready to go from the minute that Garcia throws the first pitch of the game. They have to be. They have to at least be stretched out and working on it because, like I said, and you've been reiterating, we can't even fathom a situation where Garcia doesn't get out of the first inning and gives up a crooked number. That's the worst possible start for this team.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We'll get to some of your thoughts on the Astros game six tonight against the Braves. Season on the line for Houston. Also, Texans are failing in their rebuild. We tell you what we mean next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, we'll tell you about Apollo Men's Health. Look, Dr. O is a friend of mine, and he has also been just fantastic to work with in terms of getting me on a workout program and feeling a whole hell of a lot better with my health. Your health is your wealth. You need to invest in yourself, and that's why I didn't know anything about Apollo Men's Health before, but now I can't stop talking about them because they can get you feeling like you want to feel great again. And it is as easy as that. Just sit down and talk to them. Be honest with them. Tell them what the problems are. Do you not have any energy? Are you having issues focusing? Are you having problems losing weight? You want to work out again? Are you having problems in the bedroom? They can help you with all those things and so much more. Everything is under one roof, and in this case, with two locations to better serve you near downtown Houston. Owen and his staff are going to take care of it. They're going to ask you tough questions to get to the bottom of exactly what's bothering you, and then they're going to put you on a very, very detailed program to make sure that you get the results that you need to achieve. And that's what I said, from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom. They have answers. It's as simple as going to ApolloMH.com and booking the first appointment. You're going to find out most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel. Mention my name, Joel Blank. Get the free B12 shot on your first visit. B12 gives you energy on a week-to-week basis. I get a B12 shot every Friday morning, and I'm telling you, I've noticed a difference. I feel more energized throughout the week. You can too. They do things to make sure that it's chartable and it's reasonable to understand exactly what they're doing. It's not stuff that just takes your money and doesn't get you the results. Check them out today, ApolloMH.com. Book that first appointment. Check out the good people doing a lot of great things for our listeners at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5.